This is Jean Marie Laskus with the podcast Cement City. So there's this election coming up, a big one, and one guy's been indicted. People are talking voter fraud. Democracy itself is on the line. Sound familiar? Well, this isn't that election. This one is in Denora, Pennsylvania, a dying town in the middle of nowhere, where I bought a house and stayed for 3 years. Listen to and follow Cement City, an Odyssey original podcast in partnership with Cement City Productions, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to KCBS In-Depth.
Really, in order to find quality care, you often have to be on a wait list that's months long.
The people, places, and issues the Bay Area's talking about.
The aggressive advocates who were looking to overrule Roe for so long, they really had no idea of the consequences they might be opening up.
In this case, there very well may be charges that are appropriate. For example, trying to obstruct an official proceeding of Congress, right? That is unlawful.
This is KCBS In-Depth.
It took a few decades, but by the mid-90s, the U.S. had managed to completely eliminate leaded gasoline from all passenger cars, an effort spurred on by revelations about the severe health risks from lead exposure, including nerve damage, heart disease, and cancer. But this effort did not get leaded fuel out of every engine in America. Even today, the country's fleet of piston-engine aircraft still runs on leaded fuel. Now, environmental advocates, local leaders, and the aviation industry itself all say leaded fuels have got to go to be replaced with cleaner-burning gas. But how to make that happen? Well, that's a question that's sparking heated debate, including here in the Bay Area. Welcome to KCBS In-Depth, broadcasting throughout the Bay Area and streaming on the Odyssey app. I'm Keith Menconi. Today on the program, we'll be hearing more about the work being done to get lead out of aviation fuel and the leading role that Santa Clara County has taken in that effort. Meantime, though, we'll also be hearing why some within the industry have been critical of the county's approach, warning that moving too fast could make the skies less safe. All that coming up in just a bit, but let's start at the beginning. It is a complicated debate, so to help us get our bearings, we're going to welcome on first Ariel Wittenberg, public health reporter for E&D News, who just wrote a lengthy investigative piece on the topic for Politico. Ariel Wittenberg, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Keith.
So just so folks have the right picture in their minds, we're talking about the country's general aviation fleet, which includes about 200,000 aircraft. They come in all shapes and sizes, but generally we're talking about smaller piston engine aircraft. Let's start with the obvious question, Ariel. Why has it taken so much longer to get lead out of these planes than it has to get lead out of cars?
Well, I think part of the reason is just that, as you mentioned, the diversity of the fleet. You know, a car engine, from the difference between a Ford engine and a BMW, you know, is not so big that they can't use the same kind of gasoline. That's not the case in general aviation with these planes. A lot of them are very old, you know, dating back to World War II. And the one thing that all of these planes we know that they can fly on safely is leaded 100-octane aviation fuel, which is called avgas. And that lead, you know, although if you ingest it, if it gets into your body, it's a potent neurotoxin that can impact your cognitive development. But for airplanes, it's important because it prevents misfiring, which can really be dangerous if that happens when you're in the air.
Right. So some technical challenges. There's a lot of variety here. Maybe we could also dedicate a moment to discussing why it is important to get lead out. As we mentioned at the top, there are some serious health concerns. Perhaps you could expand on that a little bit and also just talk about how many people are potentially getting exposed.
Yeah, absolutely. So lead is a potent neurotoxin. It impacts cognitive development. And what makes it especially concerning is that it's toxic even at very, very low levels. CDC, EPA, our public health authorities all say there is no safe level of lead exposure. And we know that right now the biggest source of lead emissions in the air are from these general aviation airplanes. And that can be problematic, especially for the, I believe it's around 5 million people who live near airports that serve these aircraft. And especially we're worried about the kids and the toddlers that live in these areas, because not only are toddlers and babies' brains developing really quickly, so any kind of contamination can have an outsized impact on them, but also because they engage in these kinds of behaviors, like, you know, crawling around or putting their hands in their mouths before washing them. So if there's lead in the soil, they're going to get more exposure than, you know, a 7-year-old who is better about washing his hands before he eats his lunch.
Yeah. So definitely a concerning environmental pollutant. And I think it's been getting more attention in recent years. So back to the question of what can be done to get the lead out of this fuel. As your reporting points to, there have been a lot of efforts in the works for some time to come up with alternatives, but this has been a very slow-moving process. Again, a similar question. Why has it been so slow-moving?
Right. Well, I think one of the biggest obstacles has really been, you know, the industry-led efforts to get the lead out of aviation fuel have really focused on making a 100-octane fuel. So we want to take the lead out, find some kind of a substitute, and put it in, but we still want that 100-octane level to maintain the safety of the aircraft.
And that's what would be needed for all of those 200,000 planes to be able to use it.
Exactly. Every plane would need 100-octane. But actually, 70% of the fleet doesn't need that high level of octane. They can go on, you know, what in the industry you would call a medium octane, somewhere in the 90s range. And what my reporting shown is that there actually have been proposals dating back to the 1990s for these medium octane fuels without lead. Some have actually been developed and some have just been proposed, but they never made it to the U.S. market. And that's because of something called the ASTM, which is a standard setting committee for aviation fuel. It's one of those things that you would never know it exists until you start looking into this. But they're basically in charge of approving the recipe of the gasoline. They you know, approve the recipe for gasoline for cars as well, but in this case for aviation fuel. And the folks who sit on that standard committee include representatives of Chevron, ExxonMobil, the companies that are currently making and profiting from leaded aviation fuel. And so they have blocked through the years multiple alternative fuels, including one that was being proposed by Cessna, which is an aircraft manufacturer, and another from Sweden, this company called Hemco Oil. They blocked that from coming to the U.S. But actually today, it's used in Sweden. They transitioned to this unleaded fuel. They didn't have any safety issues in, you know, having a medium and a high octane fuel being available there. But it didn't make it to the U.S. because this standard setting committee said, no, we just want this 100-octane. We're not interested in a medium-octane fuel.
All right. So a tangled set of interests right there. Here in that picture from Ariel Wittenberg, once again, a public health reporter for E&E News. This is KCBS In Depth. I'm Keith Menconi. In just a few minutes, we'll also be hearing about the local effort to push for unleaded aviation fuel that's been taking shape in Santa Clara County. But first, I want to get some industry perspective in the mix as well. So we're going to welcome on now Mark Baker. He is the president of the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association. Mark Baker, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Keith.
So we heard there about some of the roadblocks and challenges in the process of getting out the lead from aviation fuel. What would you want to add to that picture?
It is very complicated. You know, obviously, I agree that we'd like to see a lead-free fuel being supplied nationally and, frankly, worldwide. And we very much support the idea that by no later than 2030, hopefully sooner than that, as there is one fuel that is actually approved by the government through an STC process at the FAA level, now it becomes important how to get that commercially available. So that's one of the reasons I sit as a co-chair with the FAA to say, how do we expedite the process to go out there and make that happen? It's an important transition, but got to do it safely. As Ariel pointed out, you know, 60% of the fuel airplanes can use a lower octane. In some cases, a 94 octane is available in the interim kind of period. But we want all airplanes because the other 30%, 40% of the aircraft burn about 2/3 of the fuel because they're doing long cross countries and have much higher horsepower. So it's very complicated. I can go into greater detail when you're ready.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I suppose we could start with that point. You know, if we are looking for that holy grail of 100-octane unleaded fuel that works on all aircraft. Is there a potential that we're letting the perfect be the enemy of the good? If we can get a great deal out of the lead of our out of the fuel that's being used, is it possible to take a more piecemeal approach rather than waiting for that perfect solution?
Well, we're open to all ideas. If we get 97% of the fleet, would be something that would be a conversation at the moment. We haven't seen anything like that. I do believe this SDC fuel that has been approved out of Gammy, Oklahoma, has potential. It's actually approved for all piston engines at the moment from the FAA. It just needs to get some more exposure into the marketplace and let the market make a decision. But I believe it has potential. There's some other fuels coming through the PAFI process, which has been government funded for the last dozen years, to look at over 200 different formulas of fuels that can replace this fuel, just to help put in a little bit of perspective. And again, supporting the idea we need to get away from it. We have like 99% less lead in the air from aviation than we did in the 60s, because the airlines, the military, everybody, including all the autos, as pointed out, were burning a leaded fuel mixture, which was once as high as 130 octane. It was reduced to 100 octane about 30 years ago. And the only part left is to really satisfy this general aviation fleet, which is made up of an average of 48-year-old airplanes.
Yeah. So again, just pointing to that complexity that we've been talking about the entire conversation. One more quick point. I'm wondering if you could respond to the implication from Ariel's reporting that there hasn't been that needed sense of urgency within the industry to make this transition, in part because of those tangled interests with the oil and fuel producers. What do you make of that perspective?
Well, I have a little history. I've been running this organization for 10 years, but I can tell you that over the last couple of years, I joined with the FAA co-lead to say, let's take over from, instead of just letting this be a refiner review, let's pull all the constituents together. I represent all the owners and operators of general aviation aircraft in this country. The FAA does the regulatory side, but now we have everybody from the distributors, the engine manufacturers, all working with this thing called the Eagle Group to try and facilitate and expedite the safest, fastest transition we can do. So Big Oil is no longer in charge of this. They're working with us.
So that may have been a problem in the past. You're saying it's no longer a problem?
I believe that if it were a problem, it no longer can be a problem, because we're going to force it through from a market issue.
All right. Well, certainly a lot more that can be said on all those fronts, and we will dive more deeply into them in a little bit. But as promised, we want to bring in what's happening in Santa Clara County now, just for some background for folks who haven't been following it. Just over a year ago, the county broke ground nationally when it banned the use of leaded aviation fuel at its two local airports. The move earned cheers from many, but also a whole lot of pushback from pilots groups, including the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association. So we're glad to have them on right now. And their complaints prompted an investigation by the Federal Aviation Administration. Then, just last month, through an apparent breakthrough, the agency paused the investigation and invited the county to participate in a nationwide study aimed at figuring out how to best track a course towards the unleaded future. So, at least from my vantage point as an outsider looking in, it seems like a major about face took place here, once at odds with the FAA, now seemingly working with the FAA. So clearly a lot happening on the local front. To tell us more about it, going to welcome on our third and final guest. She's someone who's been leading that local effort, Santa Clara County Supervisor Cindy Chavez. Cindy Chavez, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Keith.
So I guess, again, let's try to start at the beginning for this part of the conversation, too. What were you observing and what have you learned about the impacts of lead exposure in Santa Clara County? And how did that lead you to make the decision to ban leaded aviation fuel in the county?
Yes, thank you. And thank you very much for covering this story. So for Santa Clara County, what happened is that we have an airport called Reed Hillview Airport, and we have two, and San Martin Airport. Reed Hillview Airport sits on the east side of San Jose. As your listeners know, San Jose is the 10th largest city in the country. But within a mile and a half of just Reed Hillview Airport live 52,000 people. In that 1.5 mile circumference, or I'm sorry, radius, what we have is 21 schools, and almost 13,000 children live within that area. So when the county was looking to make a decision about whether or not we would close the airport, permanently. One of the things that we were considering is the health and well-being of the children and the families who live near that airport. Unfortunately, over years and years and years, the city of San Jose allowed for homes and businesses and childcare centers and schools to be built right along the fence line of Reed Hillview Airport. But one of the things that really moved us to move more quickly really was a lead study that we did on our own that really showed the high blood lead levels for children who live downwind and close to the airport. And, you know, because we're in the health business, we recognized that we had to make some dramatic changes. One of those was to disallow the sale of leaded aviation fuel at both of our airports. And that we began in January of 2022.
And how has that experience been going so far?
Well, it's interesting. We have seen the same level of flights as we had before. And we're selling the 94 octane level, unleaded level of gas by Swift Fuels. And what we've found, we don't know how many people are bringing, leaded fuel onto the our different airports and fueling their own aircraft or flying in with leaded fuel. But what we know is that we've been able to sell almost as much fuel year over year. And that we think is a very good sign.
All right. Well, let's bring in the very latest news on this. The FAA now apparently working with Santa Clara County on this national study that is aiming to find some best practices for how to get lead out of aviation fuel. Assuming you take that as a positive turn of events, the investigation over.
Well, you know, what they did is they put a pause on it. And what that means is that we're looking to work with the FAA to figure out a path forward that makes, creates opportunities, by the way, not just for our airport, but for the millions. We think it's 6 million families that live around airports across the country that we think it's really important that they move forward on this. But where we are right now is in a process with the FAA where we're working together to develop that pilot so that we better understand what the expectations of the FAA are and also how it impacts the health and well-being of the residents who live around the airport and also the people who fly out of the airport.
I'm Jean Marie Laskus. I'm a journalist. I spent my career helping Americans understand the lives of other Americans. Coal miners, gun shop clerks, staffers in the White House mailroom. In my new podcast, Cement City, I tell the story of an entire town. A dying town that you have absolutely no reason to care about. But trust me, you will. Listen to and follow Cement City, an Odyssey original podcast in partnership with Cement City Productions. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This is KCBS In Depth, your weekly deep dive into the events and trends shaping life in the Bay Area and beyond. I'm Keith Mancone. Today on the program, amid concern about possible health impacts for those living nearby small airports, we check in on the effort to get lead out of aviation fuel. Joining us for this conversation, speaking with Ariel Wittenberg, public health reporter for E&E News, also speaking with Mark Baker, president of the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association, and we just heard from Cindy Chavez. She is a Santa Clara County supervisor. So, Mark Baker, you just heard what Cindy had to say about the county's experience so far. Again, hoping you can provide some response to that. I know that you've been at odds with the county, concerned about some of the possible safety risks posed by this transition. What would you want to add there?
Well, so certainly, Cindy pointed out, you know, we're not in disagreement that we would like the fuel to not have any lead in its emissions, period. So it's just really about the timing and doing the safe transition that we have knowledge and have seen already what one misfueling incident at Reed Hillview. When you put the 94 into a higher compression engine, either detonation is possible or likely very soon, which is a real adverse condition. We think about the safety, and I think that's why the FAA has been aligned with the safety first on this. Well, we find a way to accelerate the transition away for all aircraft to be able to use that public port and they come in and going that supports the Reed Hillview and San Martin. I actually used to be based at San Martin, so I'm very familiar with the area and respectful of the idea that we want to get it done fast, but we just got to do it safely. And, you know, there's been other studies, by the way, that this Mercury News I know published a while back that, you know, we got to figure out what this is, but we're not in disagreement that we want it to go away.
So two points there, and I want to bring them both to Cindy. So the first was that Mark is saying that a misfiring incident has already occurred. There's concerns that potentially more safety incidents could occur as well. What has been done to keep an eye on that, Cindy?
Yes, and let me just say to Mark, and I really appreciate the leaning in on the urgency and the speed at which this needs to happen. What I would say that's going to be really critical for us is that we also have a shared interest in the safety of the pilots. You know, obviously we want the airport to run safely and securely. We also have 52,000 people that live right around the airport. We don't want aircraft, you know, landing in those communities. So, you know, that's a high priority for us. I do think that, you know, one of the challenges that we have here, and I think, you know, Ariel really pointed to this, and I'd be interested in everybody's perspective on this, which is, I believe that when we look back, we recognize that for 50 years, we've banned leaded fuel in cars. If we had had a strategy to start to remove leaded fuel from airplanes over that long arc, instead of having these fits and starts, I think we would be further along the path. And so one of the challenges that we have is, how do you create a market so that Swift Fuels and GAMI and other companies have an opportunity to create a fuel that has a market? And one of the things that we hope happens is that we can demonstrate that we can move the 70% of piston engine aircraft safely throughout the country on 94 octane level unleaded fuel. And that starts to create the market that we so desperately need to have available for pilots across the country. I've talked to a number of pilots who would like access to this fuel, and it's not consistent. And that makes it challenging for them to be able to both continue to do the thing they love, which is fly, either for work or pleasure or any number of other reasons, and be able to do it in a way that doesn't pollute the environment, for especially for our families and our communities. So for me, this feels like we all need to lean in on the market side of this. And I think the point that also that Ariel raised is that there is fuel available used in other countries that is not yet available here is a concern of mine, because again, I think if we lean in and really make this a priority, we're gonna have safe unleaded fuel that's both safe for pilots, the neighborhood, and the neighborhoods surrounding the airports.
Supervisor Chavez, just briefly, to put a fine point on that, would it be fair to say that you're saying it is the role of local governments such as yours to be a pressure point to add more urgency to this process?
Yes, and honestly, Keith, we're obligated to do it. And let me just give a perspective on this from a health perspective. The County of Santa Clara that operates these two airports also operates three hospitals and over 14 clinics. We're in the healthcare business. We have the public health department. This county led the effort, was one of the leading litigators against leaded paint in our community. I mean, and so this is something that we've taken seriously for a very long time, and I think have tried through, you know, the EPA and directly with the FAA to encourage them for years. By the way, not over the last few years, but for 20, 30 years to get this issue addressed.
Hmm. Well, Mark Baker, again, with the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association, what do you make of that perspective that, you know, there do need to be some pressure points in this current debate, pushing this forward in order to make timely progress?
So the 94 product is a good product, by the way, for a number of aircraft, although Swift's intention is to have their stated and printed intention is to drop the 94 once they come up with the 100. One of the challenges in this whole category is it's very small. I mean, the amount of avgas burnt in the whole country is equal to about 3 or 4 hours of car gas. So having multiple pumps from most airports is not a, economic alternatives. So that's why it's always been the attempt to get one fuel that fits all. And that's the first attempt, and that's what Swift would like to do too, instead of having the infrastructure built out for multiple pumps. And as long as we can keep the pedal to the metal and trying to find a way to get this accelerated, you know, to a fuel that is acceptable to all engines, the faster we go, the better we are. But all we're saying is that let's do it in a smart and safe way, because I think Cindy pointed out, we don't want airplanes falling into anybody's community, and detonation is a real threat and a real issue. So I'm making a commitment, as has the industry, to go as fast as we possibly can and take this out of the hands of a few and make this really a whole community effort to try and get this transition done. But I can't express how important it is to do it smart, timely, and safe.
Well, just to maybe make this less abstract for our listeners so they could understand, what are the kinds of scenarios you're most worried about, Mark Baker? You know, if every county in the country tomorrow followed the same path that Santa Clara County did, what would that look like? What would be the scenario that you would be worried about there? Because we hear Cindy right now saying that the county took this step over a year ago. They're seeing, you mentioned one safety incident, but they're seeing generally flights come and go from their airports generally without incident. And they're also seeing selling a similar amount of fuel. So if every county adopted this policy, what might you expect to see?
Be a complete disaster for general aviation if we went in this direction. Mm. Unfortunately, the national airspace is managed federally, much like the national highway system, because it's for all users transferring across the country and using this ecosystem to be able to use these forms of transport to access communities. That's why it's at a federal level. So that's why we think it's important to invoke the part that the FAA is with the grant assurance. All these airports around the country, for the most part, have been paid for by the taxpayers in the whole country, and to keep that access point going. So, you know, we think about all the things that general aviation does, from education, training pilots for future airline careers or things like that, as well as in the Bay Area, the DART, which is a big, you know, a disaster relief thing, which I was part of out there, which when there's an earthquake in California, in some cases, the only way to access these places is with general aviation airports to an airport, not the highway bridges collapse and other reasons why general aviation is really important, whether it's hurricane relief or earthquake relief or moving cancer patients and all the things that go on every day. And I think it just comes back to understanding that we just need a little bit of time to make sure we get this transition done. It's not a disagreement about the outcome. So, because we want to keep people safe today.
All right. Well, I want to give closing thoughts to everybody before we round things out. We are running a little bit short on time, but closing thought for Ariel Wittenberg, again, with a public health reporter for E&E News. Ariel Wittenberg, so you have been speaking with the advocates pushing for change in the avgas space, as we are calling it in this conversation. What do you think as far as the advocates are concerned, what would the best case scenario look like for this transition?
I think, you know, and Cindy, you know, herself was one of those advocates. I think, you know, this pursuing what the National Academy of Sciences called when they looked at this, pursuing a multifaceted approach and not waiting for this magic bullet 100 octane unleaded fuel to get out there. Because, you know, for years, for decades, you know, the FAA, they are the Federal Aviation Administration. They are concerned. Their top priority is with the safety of the pilots. But I think, you know, it's only been recently and, you know, to many degrees, only been because of communities like Santa Clara County that have started standing up and petitioning EPA and, you know, trying to get the lead out here. You know, until recently, the safety of the pilots has kind of taken precedence over the safety and health of the communities that live around these airports, because, you know, obviously we don't want pilots or airplanes falling out of the sky. We also don't want kids developing learning disabilities that could be prevented by, you know, having less lead emissions in the air, even if you don't have 100% of the planes coming out of an airport flying unleaded fuel. If you had a significant number of them flying unleaded fuel, that would be very meaningful, I think, and show real public health gains for these communities on the ground.
All right. And a quick closing thought to you as well, Supervisor Chavez. Obviously, the watchword for this conversation has been complexity. We haven't really even gotten into what it's going to take to ramp up the production and distribution of any new fuel. Obviously, you know, we've been talking so much about supply chains over the past few years. Here's a major supply chain issue that needs to be worried about as well. So there's a lot of devils in a lot of details. What are you hoping to see in the coming years?
Well, one is, I think it's wonderful that, you know, that KCBS and other organizations are allowing us to have these more complex discussions with the public, because I think it is complicated. That said, here's what isn't complicated. We know that very, very small amounts of lead can permanently disable children, dropping their IQs dramatically. And so we know that. And we know that lead causes all kinds of other health complications for adults. Those are things that we know. We know that this has been information that's been available to the FAA and the EPA for generations now, and that until recently, there has not been the kind of focus that we wanted to see to really address this in our communities. So what does that mean? What that means is that communities like ours across the country do need to reach out to the FAA, do need to reach out to the EPA to continue to put pressure on them to respond. And I think the point that that both, you know, both Mark and Ariel, I don't think there's anything they've said that I disagree with, except this one point that I would just really lift up, which is this. We have to collectively decide that it's important enough to prioritize, address, and do it consistently. The number of fits and starts, both with the FAA and the EPA on this issue, you can look back and see it. And now what we're saying is no looking back. Let's get this done and let's make sure we really are protecting people who live around general aviation airports around the globe. So that's it. That's that simple to me. Now, it doesn't mean that we don't have to deal with a lot of complicated issues. Yes, we had to buy extra fuel tanks, and we, each local community is going to need the support and help they need, and perhaps even the pilots to get the certificates they need and any changes they need. I mean, we're going to need the FAA and the federal government to lean in and support and help. But I think if we're serious about the health and safety of everybody around general aviation, we've got to be able to prioritize this issue around removing lead from avgas. We know we do. And I think we have to just stay very focused on it. Otherwise, I think this could be just another fit and start in the history of trying to address this issue.
All right. And closing thought to you, Mark Baker, one last time, president of the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association.
Well, again, thanks. I agree with Cindy. We thank you for engaging in this issue. It's very important. It's very complicated. But I think from the basic understanding, we all agree. There's not a disagreement, but other than doing it as a safe transition, and you know, maybe we can in some areas have 94 and the 100 currently available and the new 100 available as it comes online, because this is going to be a longer transition. If we turn the switch on today, it's going to take years to get this done. And I don't mind having 94 available in the field. It's great. All I want to make sure is there's 100 available in the field, because the risk of misfueling or underfueling is just too high. And what that could do to people on the ground and obviously the pilots and the aircraft is the risk that I ask for mitigating for the near term, but as we agree on this long-term goal.
All right. Well, a complicated topic and one that I imagine many of our listeners hadn't really thought about before. So I really thank all of you for helping open a window into this world that, as we just heard, is impacting an awful lot of people's lives. And so and we also expect to see a lot of changes in the years ahead. One last time, I'm going to thank all of our guests. We've been speaking today to Ariel Wittenberg, public health reporter for ENE News. Thank you, Ariel Wittenberg.
Thanks for having me.
And thanks as well to Mark Baker, president of the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association. Mark Baker, thanks to you as well.
Appreciate the opportunity.
And a final thank you to Cindy Chavez, Santa Clara County Supervisor. Cindy Chavez, thanks as always.
Thank you very much.
And thank you all for listening for KCBS and In Depth. I'm Keith Menconi. Stay safe. Be well. We'll talk again next week.
You've been listening to KCBS In Depth. Get every episode by subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and other podcast platforms. Visit kcbsradio.com for more news and interviews. We are the Bay Area's news station, KCBS.
This is Jean Marie Laskus with the podcast Cement City. So there's this election coming up, a big one, and one guy's been indicted. People are talking voter fraud. Democracy itself is on the line. Sound familiar? Well, this isn't that election. This one is in Denora, Pennsylvania, a dying town in the middle of nowhere, where I bought a house and stayed for 3 years. Listen to and follow Cement City, an Odyssey original podcast in partnership with Cement City Productions, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.